Zone for July 17th, 2020. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflo. Kitties.
And I'm Pam Vidor.
We're back again with another short story. Guess what, kitties? There's only one short story after this one to talk about. This one, The Adventure of the Shoscum Old Place. This is the last chronologically published Sherlock Holmes story. How about that?
This is all ready for Tales of the Crypt right here.
There's a lot of crypts in this one, huh?
This is a pretty interesting one. So it opens at Baker Street. And interestingly, note what Holmes is doing to open. So Sherlock Holmes had been bending for a long time over a low-power microscope. Now he straightened himself up and looked round at me in triumph. "It is glue, Watson," said he. "Unquestionably, it is glue. Have a look at these scattered objects in the field." And then Watson kind of bends over the microscope, doesn't seem super fascinated, but whatever. Now, isn't this interesting? We start with, like, Holmes the scientist, right, as we're about to head off into the crypt. And he's specifically looking at glue in a story all about horse racing.
Yeah, is there a connection between those two? Is there some kind of connection between glue factories and horse racing?
That was a curious opening, and it didn't connect at all.
But right.
But it is curious that old man Doyle would mention glue in a horse story, huh?
Interesting.
Right. And then I was super fascinated by the fact that Holmes is like, okay, we've got a case coming. And then he says, by the way, Watson, you know something of racing. I ought to. I pay for it with about half my wound pension. And I'm like, wait a minute. Have we ever had a sense that Watson is like a serious gambler?
Isn't that part of the Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes films where does he keep Watson from gambling? Is that one of the...
I don't know. I think so.
I don't recall that, but it's a very interesting trait that we suddenly have in the very last Sherlock Holmes story. Oh, by the way, he spends half of his pension on gambling.
And married to an unknown person. So there we go.
Who's never named, apparently.
Right.
Interesting last story, Doyle. Very subtle. Very subtle storytelling on this one, huh, Chip?
Lots of subtlety going on here. I mean, I was trying to read into something. I don't know what Doyle was trying to say here. But Watson describes Sir Robert Norbiton. He should have been a buck in the days of the Regency. A boxer, an athlete, a plunger of the turf, a lover of fair ladies, and by all counts, so far down Queer Street that he may never find his way back again. So I don't know what Holmes Doyle was trying to say there. But he eventually describes this Sir Robert, Norbert, once again, as an eternal bachelor. Sir Robert was never married, just as well, though, right?
Okay, so, yes, this might be some language indicating that he had a certain lifestyle, but the word queer might not mean what you think it means, Chip.
It may not. Absolutely right. I'm sure you could deny it.
The word queer can mean unusual, different.
Certainly not... can.
And that's how it's used throughout the canon. But by the 1920s, it is associated much more with homosexuality than it had been previously. So if this were a Victorian story, a 19th century story, I would be like, no, Chip, you're wrong. But by the late 1920s, I suspect Doyle was allowing that secondary reading. And it was still secondary at the time, but too present for his readers.
And just to point this out, later on in this story, Sherlock's going to say, what about Sir Robert Norbiton? Does his name recall anything? And Watson replies, well, I should say so. He lives at Shoscum Old Place, and I know it well. So so for all of those who are looking for Sherlock and Watson to have maybe some connection, maybe there is some connection. You never know.
Fine.
It's fun to think so, all of the John Locke.
When Pam agrees with Chip, either we are living in the upside down or he's right.
It's the upside down, just so you know. It's the upside down.
Now, you guys, this is a fun mystery, isn't it? I love. So John Mason appears. He's a very stolid man, and he believes that his employer, Sir Robert Norbertin, has gone mad. And I love the evidence he brings forward. He says that Sir Robert is clearly under a ton of stress. He has huge debts, and he's counting on winning a horse race to clear them all up. So as soon as you hear that, you know, oh, everything will be just fine. You just win the race. It sounds like a fantastic plan.
This is so a 1980s. This is a 1980s story. This is, we have to save the community center. We're going to have this horse race and we have to win. The pod race scene was the best.
Well, who knew that Doyle was going to be the backbone of so many youth and teen movies later on?
So here are the symptoms that Sir Robert is exhibiting that might suggest madness. He doesn't sleep at night. His eyes are wild. He used to be super close to his sister, but now he actually refuses to see her. He has given away her beloved pet spaniel. And, oh, by the way, and Sir John Mason doesn't lead with this, he's taken to visiting the haunted crypt that's on the that's on the family estate. So yeah, those are the facts of the case.
Where is Toby when we need him in this story? Because you know, we got a missing pet spaniel, and we're going to go out to a crypt because you know it's like Scooby-Doo mysteries at this point.
This is a very Scooby-Doo-ish mystery. I agree with that. How many stories in a row have involved dogs? Is this
all of them?
Five in a row?
But old number seven remains, still packed away, not coming out.
So what's going on with this gambling? Why does Norbertin need to win this race?
Really? Do I mention this? Well, they seem to. We would call them banker or mobsters today, but at that time, it looks like he owes a lot of money to a certain group of people, Steve.
Yeah, this is very telling of the time, isn't it? We don't say bankers. We don't say mobsters. These are very specifically the Jewish people of the community who have been lending him money. The money lenders are just referred to as the Jews, something that we certainly would not do in 2020.
And certainly mentioned 3 or 4 times throughout this story. So.
at least 3 or 4 times. And every time it was really a cringy moment for me, like, okay, we get it. But that was the truth as Doyle saw it in 1926.
And just shortly after that, we established that Lady Beatrice, Robert Norbertin's sister, and him, they share a lot in common, Steve. They have the same tastes.
Okay, do we need to address the fact that Lady Beatrice Falder has a name that's very similar to my loving mother, Beatrice Fodor?
Oh, that's so weird for you.
Yes.
But especially with what happens to poor Lady Beatrice. Steve, I'm sorry.
In advance for the crypt action that will take place later in the story.
But I did have to look up Lady Beatrice certainly is suffering from something called dropsy. I had no idea what that was. It's edema? Is that how we say that? A condition characterized by excess watery fluid collecting in the cavities or tissues of the body. So I learned something new today.
At least one thing.
Oh, yes.
Now, not more. There's more definitions to come, Pam. Don't worry.
I have to define a lot of
scrolled,
stuff.
If you scrolled through the document thus far. Yeah, Lady Beatrice and Robert have always been the best of friends. They have a lot of the same tastes. And now suddenly she's not around. And the mystery deepens here.
Well, it's a good time to crack a beer open because you can learn a little bit about Beatrice.
I just thought it was super interesting. Is this the first time that we've had a woman drinker? Because John Mason says, she is brooding and sulky and drinking, Mr. Holmes, drinking like a fish. And I feel like we've seen many, many male alcoholics throughout the canon. I don't remember seeing a woman with an alcohol problem. Is that just me?
It's progressive times.
You're accurate.
It's progressive times in the 20s.
I think this is progressive times. I think you are absolutely right, Chip. I think that we are seeing, just like many storytellers, he has matured. He is putting in those aspects of regular life that he hadn't put in before. And females with alcohol problems is, I don't think we've seen that before in Doyle.
So wait a minute, Steve. Are you agreeing with Chip too? What's happening?
What? This is like
it's the upside down.
It is. It certainly is. Some
this
world
is an
that
episode of
exist.
Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Hello, kitties.
Now, you guys, did John Mason strike you as oddly reticent about the maid and then oddly nonchalant about finding a human? I mean, I thought it was funny. Like, this guy arrives and he's like, okay, I have to tell you a lot about my employers, right? The guy's mad. He's given away the spaniel. She has a drinking problem. I mean, he's really, I think, like, pretty overt about he's past like being the good butler who keeps the family secrets by now, right? And so he has this little exchange. Who keeps Lady Beatrice Falder company? Holmes asked at last. There is her maid, Carrie Evans. She has been with her this 5 years and is no doubt devoted. Mr. Mason shuffled uncomfortably. She's devoted enough, he answered at last, but I won't say to whom. Ah, said Holmes, I can't tell tales out of school. I'm like, really? Like, you've just emptied out all the family secrets and you can't tell us that this maid might have something going on with the brother? Really?
This so much so far reads like an old EC comic book where there was always the twist. It also reads a lot like creating the atmosphere of the Universal horror movies and sort of creating that gothic and mysterious feel where we get the introduction where they say there's something mysterious going on. And later on, we get to see that as we walk to the crypts.
Well, and it was interesting that John Mason, you know, after not wanting to tell about the maid and possibly Sir Robert, he says, yesterday, Sir Robert had gone to London, so Stevens and I went down to the crypt. It was all in order, sir, except that in one corner was a bit of a human body. And I'm just like, wait a minute. Like, it was all normal except for a bit of a human body. You informed the police, I suppose, asks Holmes. Our visitor smiled grimly. Well, sir, I think it would hardly interest them. It was just the head and a few bones of a mummy. It may have been 1,000 years old, but it wasn't there before. And I'm like, okay, whoa. So if I found a human head, I'm just going to say it right here on this show. If I found a human head, I wouldn't call it, first of all, a bit of a human body. I actually would inform the police, and I wouldn't assume that I really have the forensic knowledge to date these human remains. But anyway, John Mason and I don't perhaps have as much in common.
Well, it was of its time, I guess.
Well, you know, it wasn't there before, so it's not like there's always been a human head sitting in the corner of the crypt. Yeah, so like this guy is pretty good at burying the lead. Can we agree to that?
Yeah, that's two or three times in this interview where we are startled by the last thing he says, not the first thing. So we get to another vocabulary word, Professor Hessenflow. What does the word touts mean?
Touts means offering racing tips for a share of any resulting winnings. So supposedly a person is an expert and they're going to share their knowledge. And if they share it with you and you place your bet and you win, you will share some of the winnings with the person offering that information.
Okay. All right. So we're learning about racing. We're learning about mummies. We're learning about reporting bits of human when we find them. So that's good. We're learning a lot in this story. Sherlock and Watson review the case. Sherlock is the one who summarizes it, and Watson says he can make nothing of it. This is the classic, once again, this is one of our favorite things, right, from the canon, is Sherlock goes, well, there you go, Watson. You've got all the information. And Watson goes, I don't even know what's happening right now.
He's a medical doctor. There's a dead head, I guess. And he can't think of anything to share. Well, you know what? We all have our specialties.
He does identify the piece of charred bone as a human femur. So that's something. Now, and then this brings us to a wonderful moment where Sherlock is like, Let us suppose, Watson. It is merely a scandalous supposition, a hypothesis put forward for argument's sake, that Sir Robert has done away with his sister. My dear Holmes, it is out of the question. Okay, so pause there. Now, why would it be out of the question that this guy, who, I mean, is not exactly like an upstanding citizen in the first place, would commit murder on this, the 60th story? I mean, Watson has been investigating murders for like 30 years by now. Why is it so out of the question?
Now, is this a part where we bring in the John Mulaney comedian bit where he talks about iced tea and in whatever the show is?
Oh, Law and Order Special Victims Unit, right?
Yes.
Where he's always astonished by the depravity of humanity. Mm.
He only works in that department. This is only his specialty, but iced tea every time is just like, you mean like some crazy thing is happening.
I can't believe a human would do that to another human. Well, you know, it's interesting though, but the reason I paused there is because we might think that, but Holmes's response really reshapes, I think, what he's saying. So, my dear Holmes, it is out of the question. Very possibly, Watson, Sir Robert is a man of an honorable stock, but you do occasionally find a carrion crow among the eagles. So you guys, this isn't about like, I didn't even know that murder would happen in this, our little town of London, England. This is actually about class. He's a sir. He's part of the nobility. He's not going to murder his sister. That's not something noblemen do. And so Holmes is like, you know, Watson, in general, this isn't something nobility does, but every once in a while, you get a bad apple, even in the nobility. So it's like a really interesting perspective on class there that I think isn't something that we would really think about 100 years later and in the United States.
And this is the part where we go, dun, dun, dun.
And he's in a desperate situation. He's a gambler who's got these horses and he is in a desperate situation. And we've seen so many cases of desperation leading to, you know, at least hurting somebody else, but possibly murder. And for Watson to be once again our inside guy who's not seeing it, just because we're not seeing it and seeing all of the tiny details like the superhero of Holmes does, it's great to have that in this last story.
Absolutely. And then we get the awesome gothic scene where Holmes and Watson are like, ooh, we better investigate this family crypt where we've recently had the discovery of a new human head. And then in comes Sir Robert Norberton, and he is furious. He's a giant of a man, and he's super angry. And then Holmes is very calm, as usual. My name is Sherlock Holmes, said my companion. Possibly it is familiar to you. In any case, my business is that of every other good citizen, to uphold the law. It seems to me that you have much to answer for. Sir Robert glared for a moment, but Holmes's quiet voice and cool, assured manner had their effect. Now, am I the only one who paused when Holmes is like, just like every other good citizen of this land, I always walk around upholding the law?
Of course.
Never
tampering with, you're right. This is totally Adam West right here.
This is vigilante justice. This is justice from the perspective of one person. No matter how harmful that justice is, I'm going to find justice just like that of every other good citizen.
Well,
yes, this is the Adam West version.
All right. So I was wondering if I read this incorrectly, but Holmes and Watson catch Robert Norberton. And assume Norberton then invites, he's like, yeah, you caught me. Let me invite you up to my gun room. And then Holmes and Watson go, okay, let's go up there and talk about this.
Well, it's better than being in the crypt, right? Kitties.
Yeah, what could go wrong in the gun room?
These are British people. Those are just guns. They're not for shooting. He's not an American.
He doesn't have a pink shirt with his wife hanging out in front of his house as people protest in front of him.
Now,
goodness,
Sir Robert is completely unrepentant to what has happened, right? So he explains that he knows that his horse is going to win. So there you go. His sister died of natural causes like a week ago. And he didn't want to report it because he would lose the estate, which includes the horse that's going to win and help him get out of debt. And so, and he's just like, he doesn't really seem to think anything is wrong with this. And so,
all right. So if we're at Las Vegas and this is the, like, if I could just get this one horse, if I could just catch this one number, this certainly sounds desperation and a lot of hope.
Well, and a lot of really crazy justifying, right?
Oh, so, yeah.
Says, your conduct seems to me inexcusable, Sir Robert. The baronet shook his head impatiently. It is easy to preach, said he. Perhaps you would have felt differently if you had been in my position. One cannot see all one's hopes and all one's plans shattered at the last moment and make no effort to save them. It seems to me that it would be no unworthy resting place if we put her for the time in one of the coffins of her husband's ancestors lying in what is still consecrated ground. We open such a coffin, remove the contents, and place her as you have seen her. So it was all very respectfully done.
It's all good.
Consecrated ground.
It's consecrated ground. Forget about great Aunt Hilda that we had to throw on the ground. Right. Forget about her. But it's consecrated ground. We're doing everything right. Don't worry about it.
And watch and goes, oh, of course, this makes sense. Total sense here.
And it's so funny because Holmes says, I thought that Holmes's response here again goes against like 59 stories in the canon. Well, Sir Robert, said Holmes, rising, this matter must, of course, be referred to the police. It was my duty to bring the facts to light, and there I must leave it. As to the morality or decency of your conduct, it is not for me to express an opinion. Now, our very reticent Sherlock Holmes, who has literally said, you be the judge, I'll be the jury, John. Let's do this thing. I mean,
we got a boat ready just in case. Going to Australia.
Not this time. This time we have to bring this straight to the police.
Right? And I just think that is such a fascinating way to end the canon, right? Not the story, but the canon. So let's go to the ending, and then I want to hear your opinions on this because I think it's fascinating. Now,
can we have an American ending?
We can end the canon with an American ending. I don't see why not. It is generally known now that this singular episode ended upon a happier note than Sir Robert's actions deserved. Joscombe Prince did win the Derby. The sporting owner did net £80,000, and the creditors did hold their hand until the race was over, when they were paid in full and enough was left to reestablish Sir Robert in a fair position in life. Both police and coroner took a lenient view of the transaction, and beyond a mild censure for the delay in registering the lady's decease, the lucky owner got away scatheless from this strange incident in a career which has now outlived its shadows and promises to end in an honored old age. The end. Wow. What do you make of this?
Well, yeah, Americans like happy endings, and this one is probably the happiest of all. So,
is it? Wait.
Everyone was paid. The dance off was won, and now they have the community center for the kids. So.
And beyond that, I think that this is an older author. This is an older Doyle looking back upon his career. And I think that those final words of the canon, a career which has now outlived its shadows and promises to end in an honored old age. I think that that's Doyle talking about his career and his writing and how this is the last words that he wrote for Sherlock Holmes.
Like a saber-toothed tiger, a little long in the tooth here.
Okay, yes. The casebook of Sherlock Holmes, Doyle is a little long in the tooth. There are so many stories in this collection that we did not like at all because of the perspective of the older author. But I think that he's really introspective about who he is, who Sherlock Holmes was for him. We read another book this week, Pam, that you weren't involved in, that was looking at the biography of Doyle and how he resented the fact that Sherlock Holmes was his greatest creation and maybe came around to enjoying the fact by the end.
Absolutely. And I think that we could see that in the intro to the casebook, right? Mm-hmm. That he said he had no regrets about writing Sherlock in such an extensive way. But here's what I want to say, you guys. So at the end of his last bow, remember the final story in his last bow, in which basically Sherlock Holmes saves all of Europe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Remember, there's this political intrigue, and Sherlock Holmes saves Europe. Now, I think it's very fascinating that then, as he's sort of finishing, he has Sherlock Holmes, you know, solve this really gothic mystery. But honestly, if Sherlock hadn't arrived, nothing would have really been especially different here, right? I mean, this guy who's not exactly a criminal, but not exactly an upstanding citizen, is a member of the nobility, and he does get away with everything.
Right? Yeah. So the race happens, he wins the race, he pays off his creditors, and
lives happily ever after.
There was nothing really, truly for the investigation to do.
Right, exactly. Hmm. And it's really interesting because, you know, classic detective fiction, like Sherlock Holmes, is often seen as fundamentally conservative in that you have a crime is committed, and then in the end, the status quo is restored.
Mm-hmm.
This is like a great example of that. Well, there is a crime there in like disturbing human remains and not reporting the death of a loved one. But in the end, Sir Robert continues to be the nobility. He's actually made enough money off this race to maintain a fair position in life. And the status quo is maintained and Holmes retires. So It's a very conservative ending to a canon that has a lot of really fascinating and subversive stories to it, as we have seen over these past several months.
We ever discover the ghost of Arthur Conan Doyle writing new mysteries, he could just pick up right where he is.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
In his crypt.
That's right. Nothing's changed.
Nothing's changed.
Read
them in any order you'd like.
And read them in the fancy order that we've read them. And I think we discovered something about the order, and reading them the order that we have has changed our viewpoint a little bit. We've got one more. There is one more story that was published before this one, but in the collection of the casebook of Sherlock Holmes, it's put at the end. And my suspicion is that this is going to be the best of these stories, because that's always my policy, is to put the best at the end. So tomorrow we're going to discuss The Adventure of the Retired Color Man, the guy in the baseball broadcast who gives the jokes, right? That's the color guy.
Is that my job, Steve?
Yes. Yes, you are correct, sir.
Wow, that was some creepy laughter, you guys.
Happy Halloween, everyone. Oh, what's Halloween going to be like? Oh, boy. Looking forward. So hopefully you are still with us. Hopefully you're still listening and paying attention and enjoying these as much as we are. We would love to hear from you. We're going to be doing our wrap-up of the casebook in the next couple of days. So we would love to hear the sound of your voice. What is your favorite of this collection? And maybe what is your favorite of the whole canon? Because we're wrapping up the entire short story collection in the next couple of days. Give us a call or a text, send us an email, follow our hashtag TMS Sherlock Holmes, and go to our dedicated Sherlock Holmes website, sandwiches@irregularhours.com, for all of these conversations over this long, arduous journey through the canon of Sherlock Holmes. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflo.
And I'm Pam Bedore.
Another mystery, kiddies!